Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Christian Channel. My name is Claire McCallan, and I am very honored to be joined by the Jim Wahlberg today to talk about the new film, Jesus Thirsts, The Miracle of the Eucharist. Hey Jim, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, no, thank you for having me.
So first of all, I've got to state the obvious. We are both Bostonians. That's where we first met, right out on the streets of the North End,
Yes,
right?
it is. Yep.
That's awesome. And where are you now?
I am in South Florida in my office.
Not a bad upgrade.
I don't like the cold. I can't do it anymore.
Yeah, I'm probably halfway there. My family did the exact same thing. They're all down in Florida waiting for me to give up. So this incredible film, which I got the chance to screen, I'm so excited to come out for the premiere next week in California. How did you get involved in Jesus Thirsts?
So, I met Deacon Steve Greco at I spoke at a in the Lagadas group in Orange County, California, and Deacon Steve is a member of that group. And we spoke a little bit afterwards, and then he circled back around with me not long afterwards and was talking to me about his desire to make a film about the Eucharistic revival. And I said, no, thanks. I don't want to make that movie. I'm stuck on why does the Eucharist need reviving, right? That's where I'm stuck. And so we talked and I said, you know, we got a big problem in our church. We have, you know, 70 some odd percent of the folks in the pews, the limited folks in the pews, that they don't believe in the true presence of Jesus in the Eucharist. I said, that's a problem. So rather than trying to bring people to our faith, why don't we focus on the people who are here already and see if we can't help them to get a better understanding of the Eucharist? And so he agreed that that was probably a good plan. So we decided in that initial meeting that it would be sort of an unraveling of the Eucharist, some Eucharistic miracle stuff, so that to sort of prove to people, right, which is, you know, almost counter to faith, right? We have maybe a blind faith, but we need, I like to over explain things. It's just my nature, right? And so I feel like people need this tangible proof that they can touch, which is, you know, again, seems odd. But and then we also would do a little bit on the Eucharistic revival, right? So that everybody wins, everybody gets their little piece. And so my initial plan was to probably spend a third of the film on Eucharistic miracles, right? To hammer home that proof. And I was chasing Scott Hahn around, trying to
as we
get
all
him,
do the universal Catholic experience.
Yeah. Trying to get him nailed down to be in the film. And so he finally called me back on a Sunday afternoon and I was in the park with my family and a bunch of friends and not allowed to be on the telephone. But I looked down and it was Scott. So I went behind a tree and I was like, hello, Dr. Hahn. How you doing? And we started talking. He said, Jim, tell me about your movie. Tell me, you know, what you want to do. And I was telling him that I was spending quite a bit of time on the Eucharistic miracles. And he goes, instead of spending so much time on the Eucharistic miracles, maybe we could spend more time on the miracle of the Eucharist. And I was like, you see, Scott, that's why I'm chasing you, brother. That's what I need you to be, that voice, to make that transition for us. He said, you know, he said, the miracle of the Eucharist in the Mass around the world every day. He's like, just take that in for a moment. And so we agreed at that moment that maybe we didn't need to spend as much time proving to the folks. We do have some miracle stuff in the film, but he agreed in that moment that he would participate in the film, which was, you know, made my Sunday at the very least. And it was really, you know, we sort of set up a line of dominoes, if you will, of people that we wanted, right? And we said, let's just see, we'll just knock down one domino at a time, right? Let's get through one door at a time and see if we can get these really smart, well-schooled, well-spoken Catholic theologians, priests, to nuns, evangelists, to just walk us through this journey of the Eucharist. And I don't, nobody, we didn't have one person say no. I mean, to get Father Alar, Father Calloway, Christophonic, Father Spitzer, we got bishops, we got, I mean, Noel Diaz, and we just got all of these people that just were so eager to have this conversation and just and saw the need for this type of journey. And of course, the timing couldn't be better, right? And so we just were blessed, and we feel like we captured what we wanted to capture. It doesn't feel like there's anything missing. Sometimes when you make films, you're like, man, if that one little thing just didn't end up on the cutting room floor, or that one, or maybe we could go back. And it's too late now. We've delivered the film. What's there is there, and I think we're all happy with it.
I think you should be. I think you should be very proud of it. Something that I felt this film accomplished very well, that unfortunately not all of our attempts at Catholic filmmaking does, it was a really nice split between kind of that documentary fact-telling, information sharing, interviews, and storytelling. And something that really struck me emotionally, as I think it will for all of our audience, were the scenes in the prison when you speak to men who essentially have life sentences, talking about their faith behind bars. And a sort of common thread, not just throughout the film, but I think through a lot of our life experiences, so many of us come to Jesus when there's nowhere else to go. And you see time and time again that the people who are most desperate for receiving Christ through the Eucharist are those who have had all of the external things stripped back. And a place like prison is, it really is the perfect place to encounter Christ. It's so
I
hard.
listen to these guys talk about being the happiest they've ever been in their life, and they're doing life. The happiest they've ever been. And like, we spend a lot of time sort of, we're preaching to the choir, right? We're talking to people that are on fire, if you will. But you walk into a room, you can almost pick out the people, right, by the gleam in their eye, right, and the smile on their face, a thing that I continuously work on. I'm from Boston. We don't
You brought a
we're not
little
a
Boston down
smiley
to
group.
Florida.
We're not a smiley group up there, but I walked into that prison after, being, we got there at 5 o'clock in the morning to go through the security process and do the whole thing and get set up. And I mean, these guys walk in, I'm like, where's the coffee? And they're just smiling, and you just, like, they're just full of joy, right? Full of joy. And the people in the room in the chapel there were really from all walks of life, all different backgrounds. You can see clearly different journeys, people trying to also sort of get away from other brokenness, if you will, and just a complete brokenness, right? Like, it's just all, when you talked about it being all being stripped away, nothing left, right? Nothing left in a prison, maximum security state prison, where they some of the guys were trying to sort of help me understand what was the average day there like. And for a guy who's been to prison, I get it, I understand. But they were like, yo, this place is just really dangerous and really real. But something about the deacon there, Deacon Tommy, and the respect that he garners on the yard and with the administration, and the guys that go there, they're not being pointed at as you know, in prison sometimes it can be harsh, right? Oh, everybody finds Jesus in prison, right? It is a different sort of feeling. It's like, hey, these guys have made a decision for their life, and we're just going to leave them alone. You know, well, be here, you know, with that sort of, come on, you want drugs, you want this, you want that, we're here. But they sort of just given them a pass to go on that journey and to be free.
And I think whether those men, the other men, realize it or not, there's a level of every knee will bow and every tongue will confess. There's a level of reverence, even if they're not aware of that's what they're doing. If they're showing that level of respect and holding back towards the believers, in some ways they're showing respect towards those men. And then when we really think about it in the context of the Eucharist, they're respecting Christ within those men. Oh my
You're
gosh, it must have
absolutely
been an
right.
incredibly powerful experience. On the flip side, some of the harder parts of the film to watch are street interviews with young people, asking, especially a lot of young people who grew up Catholic, is the Eucharist, referencing that famous Pew study, is the Eucharist a symbol or is it reality and transubstantiation? And it's hard to watch, I think, even so many of my peers sort of smirk a little bit. It can feel a little bit condescending, and they won't go so far as to be totally disrespectful and cruel about it, because for a lot of people, they know that's what their grandma believes. And they respect grandma, so they'll be respectful of the beliefs. But it can be hard to, isn't that the great paradox that these men who have nothing, everything's been stripped away, they can find Christ in the Eucharist. And then these kids that have the world at their feet are the ones sort of
Well,
able
it's what
to.
it's the problem. That's the problem, right? There it is in a nutshell, right? It's that it's just too much. There's too many things going on. There's too many influences, right? When you get it all stripped down, that's just you in a cell, and you have nowhere else to turn, right? And we need, in a lot of cases, we need to be beat into a state of reasonableness, right? With all the choices in the world and all the distractions and all the lies, right? You can be who you want to be. You can be what you want to be. You can, you know, like all you, right? Or what's the opera singer? Me, 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 right? Because the truth of the matter is, for young people, is, you know, they we become self-absorbed. We become absorbed in all of the in music and, you know, the culture and the and you know we when they're trying to fit in, right? So much easier to fit in, right? Saying that this is not real, right? It's so much harder to stand up and say I'm a believer. I mean, I believe in Jesus Christ, that, you know, that I love the Lord and that I believe in his true presence in the Eucharist. That's bold for a young person, so bold now, right? And so it which makes me really excited when I get around young people that are in love with the Lord. I mean, I look at my own daughter and her husband, and they just love the Lord, man. They just always have. My daughter and her husband have been married for just over 2 years. They're pregnant.
Congratulations.
And yeah, thank you. And you know, when they got married, I put the wrong suit on, the wrong tuxedo. I two tuxedos in my closet. I put the wrong one on. And I was like, why is this a little tight? Man, it's weird. Because I had worn it 10 years before to my daughter's quinceañera. And inside the pocket was the speech I made at her quinceañera. And I looked at it and I was like, oh my God, all the things that I talked about then are all real now in her life. That she still dedicates her life to Jesus, that she still loves the Lord, that she still puts him first above all else, right? Like, though I was reading the words and I couldn't believe it, right? I couldn't believe that I got to be a witness to this, right? That it is possible for a young person to be strong and bold in their faith. it is possible. It's courageous. And it's, I'm sure it's scary. It's so much easier to just say, yeah, man, let's put on this terrible music and go to this party and go to this nightclub. And like, I can't remember one time in my life ever commenting on what my daughter was wearing walking out of the house. Like, think about going to the mall today or walking through the North End today and what you see, right? I never one time ever had to say to my daughter, you think you might want to, you know, cover yourself up. She just, it always was the priority for her, you know, and all that she did and all that she is to glorify God.
That speaks to the father that she had. And that is something that through no fault of
probably
their own.
More the mother.
Probably well, more the mother. We'll say the mother. But the parents,
the father, I think not the
for
father.
My generation, so many people lost the opportunity or privilege to have a strong father figure in their life. And especially for girls, when it comes out to like how you represent yourself to the world and whether or not you stay in the faith, it really does, the family does follow the father. So I'm wondering if you have any words of advice, or maybe you've heard your wife give some really good words of advice for parents that want to see their children love the Lord. And in the larger context of what we're speaking about, how do you cultivate a reverence and understanding for the Eucharist in your children?
You have to live it. It can't be the words that come out of your mouth. It has to be the example that you set, right? It has to be like, my daughter was a huge part of my second major conversion in my life. She was the one, she was the secret weapon that my wife sent to me to beg me to go on to this men's retreat. And she told me, she said, I want you to go on this retreat, Daddy. I want you to be happy. I want you to know Jesus. She was 12 years old. So in that moment, she was the teacher. She was the guide. She was, you know, and we need that sometimes. We don't have all the answers. And kids don't, you know, they don't come with handbooks, right? And a lot of us are coming from difficult backgrounds and we're trying to figure it out as we go along. And I can only say that how grateful I am that I was able to have that second conversion experience that really brought me to my knees and really, it helped me to understand that if I want to have a relationship with Christ, that it's going to, there's work involved in that, that I can't just get this groovy feeling that I got at this event, this retreat, and to think that I'm going to feel like this for the rest of my life. I got to put effort into any relationship, right? I'm a married man. That's a lot of work. Mostly work for my wife because I'm a handful, but it's a lot of work. And if I want to have this relationship with Christ, I got to be willing to do the work, right? And I'm lazy. I don't want to do the work, right? I just want the results. I don't want to do the work. And so, you know, I guess to try to answer your question is it really has to be about living it. In being that example, right? And being in Mass and being at adoration and praying the rosary with my family and being out there on the front lines and being a man of service and a man of action. These are things that I'm known for in my home and recognized for at home. And, you know, I'm not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I have fallen short on many occasions. But I think it's about doing and not, you know, talking. So I don't know if that answers the question.
It does. And I think that when we look at how do we change long term, the numbers, those unfortunate numbers we saw in that Pew Research study, I think it's a really nice mix of these large cultural catalysts like the film, but then also the nitty gritty of good mothers and fathers making the hard choices every day. We need it on both the micro and the macro level. Jim, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about all this with me. Where can people see the film and when?
June 4th, 5th, and 6th. We're in over 1,000 theaters across the United States. If you go to Jesus Thirst film.com. Don't quote me on that. Double check that. But also, if you go to fathom.com, you can go to Fathom and you can go to the page. It says there's a tab for get tickets. You hit that tab and it either recognizes your zip code automatically or you put in your zip code and then all the theaters that are local to you pop up for whatever range you add in there. So, I mean, it's playing everywhere around where I am, right? It's going to be playing all over Boston. It's a thousand, over 1,000 screens. Only big, like Hollywood productions get 1,000+ screens, right? So this is a major release, and I feel extremely confident that we'll get encores. So we'll get more days, probably the following week. So
This is a
yeah,
great
go
film
to your
then
theater,
for
go with
especially.
your friends, go in community and fraternity, go with your prayer
Exactly what I
groups,
was going to say.
your, like, go with your men's group, your women's group, your fiat group, like go
On a date to Jesus Thirsts.
and then have a conversation, right? It take the information and move forward with it. Don't take it home and hoard it, right? But a group of my friends called me last night and told me they bought a theater for 120 or 30 seats. And they're like, yeah, we're so excited you're coming, right? And I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna be in Montana speaking at a Catholic event.
Well, they'll still, it'll feel like you're there when you're on the screen.
I'll watch, I may make a video, but I'll be there. Like if he said, oh, we can do it on the 4th or the 5th, I was in. But then he said it's on the 6th. And I was like, that's the
Don't be
one day
enough.
I'm not here. So yeah, I definitely encourage people to talk to your priest, mention it to your priest, that send out the website on your email blast and like let people know what's going on. Talk to your Catholic schools, the principals. We have showings. Never before has Fathom done this. We have two showings per day,
Wow.
right? So we have a 4 o'clock, so right after school, or for our seniors, right? That's they don't want to be out at night. It's like, I know I'm a senior now. I go to bed at like 8 o'clock, right? So there's a 4 o'clock and there's a 7 o'clock every day. So it's really like, if you think about it, it's 2,000 screens, right? So we've made it really hard to make excuses. So get out and see the film, and again, see it in community, see it with others, see it so with your family. See with your children. They want to, they don't know, they don't believe, they don't understand. Take them with you. Make them go. Lie to them. Tell them you're going to see some friggin' Taylor Swift
Frozen
concert
three.
on the movie theater or something.
Oh man, this was a delight, Jim Wahlberg. Thank you so much. Can't wait for all of us to see your film.
Thanks, Claire. Take care. God bless.